Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And tonight's speaker has joined us up north from the Terror Club. It's always a delight when speakers bring unfamiliar faces. It always makes me really happy when we get visitors and people support their speakers. So I'm very excited to hear the experience, strength, and hope that's inspired others to come up. And with that, we have Vince.
How y'all doing today? My name is Vance, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My sobriety date is 3/18/24. I have a sponsor. I've worked the steps. I have a home group, and I try to participate in service work as much as possible. I'm grateful for this opportunity, and this is my story. This is my first time telling it, so just bear with me, okay? I grew up with my mother and my father in the same household. My dad was a Vietnam vet. My mother was a heavy drinker. Growing up, I had lost, on my mother's side of the family, four aunts and uncles to cirrhosis of the liver. They drank themselves to death. So I was predisposed to alcohol on her side of the family. My dad, you know, growing up, he could go without it. You know, he was a weekend warrior, as they say. You know, he could pick it up and put it down as he wanted. Growing up, right, my mother would go to work and come home, and she would drink until she passed out. No one outside of the household knew about that, only us. For me, I thought that was what a functioning alcoholic looked like. I took my first sips of alcohol from one of the cans she used to leave, a Slick Small Liquor Bull can she used to leave laying around the household. When I was younger, I was like 8 years old, but I didn't like the taste of it. It tastes horrible to me. So I never did that again when it came to as far as her. The first time I took a drink, right, I was 12 years old when I really, really took a drink, right? I was 12 years old. I used to hang with the older guys in my neighborhood, and some of them was 25, some of them was 18. But I had one friend, he was older than me, he was 18, his name was Terrence. He had a full beard. He drank, and he could go into the store and buy alcohol. So one day he said, hey, man, let me borrow a couple of dollars. I said, what you finna do? He said, I'm finna go get me a 40. You know what I'm saying? I said, 40? What? I'm finna get me a 40 old English. So my sister used to work at the Olympic store that was right before 1996. She worked in Olympic store. She had all this change in this old train set. You know what I'm saying? So I went in there and I stole some change from my sister, about $6-7, and he went and got a 40 and he got me one. And I drank it. At first it tasted, I was like, man, this tastes horrible. And then he was drinking his. We sitting there, we talking. It was a little party down the street, a little summer party. It was a summer. I was 12 years old. It was a summer. So it was a little party down the street. I got to drinking, and that warm sensation hit. And I just remember him saying, come on, let's walk down here. And I went down to this party, and it was older chicks. They were 16, 17, 18. It was music playing, and I was able to dance, and I was able to interact, you know, as a 12-year-old. With these older adults, and I had a ride. I had found my thing. That day, I drank that whole 40, and I went from Fat Boy Vance to Big V. And all the older kids in the neighborhood called me Big V because, you know, I could drink those 40s, right? So every day, Terrence would come, 11, 12 o'clock. I'd go in my sister's change thing, steal $4 or $5. We would go to the liquor store. I mean, we'd go to the little corner store and he'd buy it. And I drank a 40 ounce every day. They used to call me Little 40 Man. And I drank one and I loved it. I loved it. I loved it from the jump. I drank alcoholically from that point, pretty much from the jump. I drank. That's how I drank. So later on that summer, right, I was this little short, fat 12-year-old, right? I remember drinking 40s every day. So it was time for football practice. And by me being overweight, I couldn't play football with the 11 and 12 year olds because they had to, well, you had to weigh 120 pounds, right? I weighed 140, right, at 12 years old. So I had to play with the kids older than me, right? And they were rough, man. Football was rough, man. You know, they was locking heads and one day, Terrence, it was right before my practice. Terrence said, man, I'm walking up there. We got a 40. And I drank one of them 40s and I went to practice. And I could compete then. The pain, well, it wasn't that. Locking head with them older kids wasn't as bad. And I said, damn, alcohol makes me stronger. You know, that's what my first thought was. Alcohol makes me stronger. And pretty much from that point on, I couldn't participate in any school sports without drinking or other substances. In my story, it's a lot of other substances. You know, singleness of purpose, I won't disclose what it is, but it's a lot of them. And that's my story. I'm drinking. So I go to high school, and all the kids where I'm from, so they're doing other substances. We're drinking. We're skipping classes. We're going down to the stores buying Mad Dog 2020. We drinking Old English. We chasing it. I'm just doing what the kids doing. I remember when I was like, by this time, I played basketball, football. By this time, alcohol didn't allow me to keep up the grades that allowed me to play football, right, and play basketball. So once that happened, I kind of went sideways a little bit. You know, my life took a turn for the worse. They say, I remember, like, my last days of going to regular high school. They came the first day of 11th grade. I bought me a fifth of Seagram's gin and a fifth of Seagram's 7, and I drunk one by myself before I went to school, and I was drinking, had one in my book bag drinking. I had some other substances. I ended up getting arrested, and they sent me to an alternative school, right, where you could go in and you could leave, and I started hanging with some guys from different areas, right, and they were doing different things, right. You know, we were drinking and we was using other substances. So I just stopped going to school. I had a good family at home. My dad, he was hard. He was rough. And I'm grateful for, you know, some of the lessons my dad taught me, right? He was a military Vietnam vet, and he didn't play. It was either his way or the highway. So I got to a certain time in like 16, 17 that I decided the highway was the best option for me. Or continue to take these bruisings for pops, you know what I'm saying? But I'm grateful for his strength. I'm grateful for what he gave to me. I started hanging with these guys, man, and these guys were in the streets heavy, man. They didn't come from the household I came from with the mother and father. You know, they came from where they had to get it, how they lived. So we were doing some things. We were drinking and we were drinking heavy, and I started going back and forth to jail from 17 on. Probably to 23, I never seen a Christmas or a Thanksgiving. I was in jail, out of jail. I went to prison by the time I was 18. It was just that life until I was like 22, 23, just drinking, in and out of jail, in and out of jail. When I turned 23, right, I started working in these kitchens. The times that I was out, I was already working in kitchens, right? So when I turned 23, right, I started working at this restaurant on Virginia Avenue. And I was really good at being a chef, right? And it came naturally. And in the restaurant industry, there's a lot of drugs and there's a lot of alcohol, you know, that correlates with that lifestyle, right? So, you know, I'm working in this restaurant, you know, I finally feel like I got myself together. I ain't been to jail in a minute. I meet a young lady, right? I'm drinking heavily at the time, drinking every time I get off work. Oh, I'm drinking before work, I'm drinking at work, but I meet this young lady who eventually becomes my wife. But when I first met her, no one knew we were dating, and she was like a manager at a restaurant, right? I remember one time she came, say, Vance, they wrote in the book about you. They say every time Vance goes in the cooler, he drinks one of the beers out of the cooler. And I just remember like, dang, you know, and it made me realize like, people will deal with your alcoholism. As long as you're good, outweighs your bad. You know what I'm saying? As long as you're doing them service, they'll let you continue to do what you do. As long as you're good, outweighs your bad. And I took that knowledge with me on throughout life, right? Like I say, I ended up marrying this young lady. And we was in Atlanta for a few years, and I'm working in restaurants. But I got my feet in the street life as well, right? One day, we was supposed to go on vacation or something, and I ended up getting arrested again. My dad told me about my God, whom I choose to call me, my higher power, when I was a young boy, so I always believed in God. I had seen some things in life, you know, while I was out there. I had been shot twice, I had been stabbed twice, I was every jail and prison, and by the time I was 23 years old, so I knew God was keeping me alive, right? I knew God was taking me through these different circumstances. So I meet this young lady, and I'm working, and, you know, I get arrested again. She had never seen me go through that. I get arrested again. But I had some pretty extensive charges this time. You know, I got caught with some stuff, but I get down to the courthouse. I'm arrested for a few days, and an arresting officer didn't sign the tickets. So they throw it out of court. And my wife, my first wife had enough at the time. She was like, I am done with this. You know what I'm saying? We need to get out of this city. So we moved, you know, she was a Caucasian lady. We moved to her hometown, which is Stonington, Connecticut. And that was the first time, it was my first demographical change, right? I left and we moved to another. We know it's that we take ourselves wherever we go. So I took all the shit I was doing in London, I just took it up to Connecticut, right? And I drove that young lady crazy. I know I did, you know, some of the things that, you know, I got into in Connecticut, it was a lot slower. People knew what I was doing, and one time me and her got into a really bad argument, and her brothers was over there. We got into a big fight, and I got on their ass pretty good, excuse my language, and we got into a pretty good scuffle. Her mom called my dad and told him that we're going to put, if you don't get him away from around here, we're going to put the police on him. And my dad called me. He said, "Son, I don't know what you got going on, but I can't do nothing for you in no prison in Connecticut. You need to pack your things and let that lady have that state and come on back home to Atlanta." And it was hard. It was very hard. And I fought it, but I left and came back. And eventually, I was 30 years old at the time, and I moved back home. My parents, I had a little money saved up because I had been working and hustling. I had a little money saved up, so I came back and stayed with them. So my marriage was going through the ringer, and eventually she started seeing somebody, and I started seeing somebody, and my marriage was over. That was my first dealing with depression, right? I was living at home at my parents' house. I was 30 years old. I didn't have a car because I didn't have a license, so I left all my car, everything. I left her the house, everything. I just got on the bus with what I had and came home. I didn't have a job. My divorce was over, and depression had kicked in. And growing up for me in the African-American household, that wasn't discussed, the way you feel, depression and things of that nature, right? I had never, ever, I had never seen my dad cry, so I was an adult. I'd never seen him. He didn't complain about work. We muscled through. Yeah, it was my first. Going through that divorce was very hard on me, and I was suffering through these bouts of depression, right? And I just drank heavily and heavily and heavily. And one day, my dad, he was letting me, you know, do my thing. He came in the room. He said, "Hey, man, you're going to have to get up. I know you got a little money. You're going to get up. You're going to find you any kind of job. You feel me? You're going to have to get over this woman." He said, and this was his exact word. My dad was hard. He was like, "Shoot, I don't care. Go find you another woman. I don't care if she got the same name. You might even get you one look like her." And I was like, oh, you know what I'm saying? Dad wasn't playing. He was like, "Man, get up, man. You my son." You feel me? And I got up. I found the job. And I commenced to, you know, go for this little piece of job to that little piece of job and just drinking and getting fired and drinking and getting fired. And one day, I was standing in my mom's garage and I was drinking. I used to tell people before I became honest through this program, I got this scar on my face fighting in prison and saying all these hard things that I went through. But honest to God, one day I was standing in my mom's in the driveway drinking, and I passed out. I don't even remember. She told me, and I fell and hit my face on front of her bumper, her 93 Bonneville. And I woke up right in the bed, and I was bruised up, scarred up, and I was like, "Man, what daddy do to me? Jump on me like?" She was like, "Baby, you passed out. You need to get some help for this, right?" And I was like, I said, "Well, I can quit," but it was my first time trying to quit, so I said, "I'm just going to drink beer for a while, and I'm not going to drink liquor." You know, she's like, "Cool, that'll work." So then I went from drinking beer to sneaking them little shot airplane bombs, and then eventually I went back to the old me, and I'm just drinking liquor. So she was like, baby, you gotta get some help. And she found this detox. And when she found the detox, I went down there. It was a 30-day detox. It was my first time ever trying to truly quit drinking. And I stayed down there for 28 days. But 15 days in, I met a young lady. She had already been there 15 days. She had already been there a while, and she was going home. We made some type of connection. When my 30 days was up, she was waiting at the door with me, came to pick me up. And as soon as I gave her a kiss, I tasted Jack Daniels. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, man, we immediately went to the liquor store. And we drank for 2 days straight, and until one day I went to a restaurant, and I woke up in jail the next day. And that was a lot of waking up in jail. Now, I remember going to an interview one time. I had all the great intentions. I had on a shirt and tie, and I started needing to get a drink to get the hanks off, and I woke up in jail. And it was a lot of waking up in jail. I wake up in jail, I come home, my dad talks to the church, and he gets me in this program at church. It's a faith-based program. They don't work the 12 steps. They work God. And I had already had no problem with God, and I was at this program, and I was drinking. And I was drinking while I was at the program. And my dad knew all the people who ran it. So, you know, what they would do is, if you get caught drinking, you couldn't leave the house for 3 days or something like that. They had finally, when they got enough of me, me and the pastor got into it. I don't remember actually getting into it with him, but I do remember getting into it with the police that they had called. Yeah, I broke out in handcuffs that time too, and ended up that time though, I fought with the police and I ended up going back to prison, right? And spent I was like 32 at the time. And I'm spending like a year in prison that time. But while I was in prison, I really jumped into my Bible, right? And I was reading my Bible, and I was locked in, and I was running prayer groups. So when I came home, I had every intention of staying sober, right? I went to church every Sunday. I found a good job. I thought I had found the answer. I do the right thing, right? And one day, I was with a young lady, and we was walking through the grocery store, and she was grabbing some things to cook. I just saw some beer, and it just popped me just like that. I was like, man, I need a six pack. And while I grabbed the six pack, I might as well get me a pint of liquor to go along with it. And by that morning, I was like, man, how did this happen? I'm going to church. I'm focused on God, right? How did this happen, man? And life just got bad all over again. So my mother called. I'm back down at St. Jude's. I'm 33 years old. I'm back down at St. Jude's. The detox, right? So I'm in the detox. I'm taking it serious. It was my first time really being exposed to AA, but it was people coming into the AA, and they were doing the AA meetings in the rehab, right? Somebody convinced me to go to the men's program. So when my 28 days was up this time, I went to the men's program. I started working the steps with a guy. They gave you a sponsor at that time when I was at St. Jude's. They gave you a sponsor. So they gave me the sponsor. And he was a gay guy. It was my first time. A lot of things happened with that interaction, right? Some of my homophobic ways went away dealing with this young man. But I remember I got to the fourth step. We were sitting there talking. I seen all this work, and we had all this work laid out, and I was like, man, I can't do this with this man. I had to have surgery at the time as well, right? And St. Jude's wouldn't allow me. I had to have a bullet removed from my leg that had been in my leg for like 10 years. And St. Jude's wouldn't allow me to have the anesthesia, so I ended up going home. But I had got a good base, and I found the sponsor, and I worked with him. But when that fourth step came up, I was like, I gotta find a better way to do this, because I'm not exposing myself to this man like this. I fell back from him. I end up staying sober 7 years, a dry drunk. I just, every time I felt some type of way, I hate rehab. I hated rehab. So I would ride down, look at the building, and that's all I need. I ain't finna use no drugs, you know what I'm saying? I'm staying away from that. I ain't drinking nothing. You feel me? Because I don't want to be back in there. I don't want to be nowhere where they're telling me what to do, when to eat. That lasts for about 7 years. And I remember meeting this young lady that did not understand my disease, right? And she would always, you know, do this other substance with me, and I was doing good, you know. I had 7 years sober and dry drunk, and I wasn't the greatest person in the world. I didn't have any program, so I still was a horrible person. I was just sober. She was like, you know, do this with me, and I remember doing this other substance with her, right? And that lasted for a while, right? But eventually, right, I learned that time that other substances will take me back to what I really love. You feel me? It'll take me back to the alcohol, what my body is truly craving, right? So I got back to alcohol, and every time I drink, I end up in jail. I'm just going to be honest with you. So I was dating another young lady, went through a roadblock. I had some things that I shouldn't have had, and I got arrested, right? When I got arrested this time, you know, I stayed in the week. I dried out. When I came home, my parents had found another program. It was a sober living program, right? They took me out there, and that was the first time, you know, I was going to meetings at the program. We was going to outside meetings, but I met a guy, and he said he would be my sponsor. He was a younger guy. He said he would be my sponsor. And he took me through the steps, right? And he took me through the steps. His thing was he's going to take me through the steps as fast as possible, 12 weeks, and so I can get that spiritual awakening. And he took me through the steps. I'm very grateful for that. Started working the program. I stayed sober. I found the home group. I was doing right. I was doing the right thing. And I come to find out now, anything that you put before your program, you're going to lose that and your program, right? So I started working, financial security. I started working these two jobs and working. And I just stopped going to meetings, right? And that separation came involved, right? You feel me? So I got the grand idea that I can use these other substances again. So I'm back using these other substances. Eventually, I got the alcohol, which takes me to my bottom. And my bottom, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper every time. That I have wrecked over the years maybe 10 to 12 cars. You know, I had been in and out of prison, so it got deeper and deeper. So I got disconnected, and I ended up dating this young lady, and I was drinking, and I was using other substances, and I came home from work one day, opened up the door, and there was nothing in my household. You know, she had came home, she got her son, who I had partially raised. She got her son, she got everything that we own, and she took it, and I never seen her again. You feel me? She blocked me, and I couldn't even pay the rent, because all of that was in her name. You know, I just would give her the money for everything. I deserved that because I was a horrible person at the time. I was drinking, I was using, and I wasn't faithful. And I had took that lady through the ringer, and I deserved whatever I had got in that situation. So I'm dating another young lady, living with her. We got a little place. I drove that lady almost crazy too. I'm drinking and doing my thing, and she went out of town, and I had a party in her household. And I don't know what happened this last time, but I seen it coming, and some told me, like, she talked to my parents, I need to get some help. So this is my third time. I'm back at St. Jude's, and I'm very grateful for St. Jude's. I'm back at St. Jude's for the third time. And this time, I'm in there, COVID had started, right? And I'm in there, and I'm about 40 years old, between 40 and 42, and I called my old sponsor up. And he said, "Yeah, Vance, I'll come see you, and we'll work the steps, and we'll do it just like we did the last time, right?" And I did that, and I ended up getting aggravated because I knew that this program worked, right? I ended up getting aggravated with St. Jude's and said, "I'm gonna leave after 30 days. I got what enough. I got that taste out of my mouth, and I'm gonna leave after 30 days, right?" So I just left. I worked with my sponsor, and I'm making meetings, and I started working heavily, right? Working heavily. And part of me getting sober, I realized that I did not want to be with the woman that I was with. It was okay while I was drinking and using other substances, but I got sober, and I realized I didn't want to be with this woman, right? But I'm just dragging it along. One day I'm at work, going working. I done worked the steps. I'm going to work. And I meet a younger lady. She was 20 years younger than me, and she was from another country. And we started talking, and she just looked at me differently. And we started kicking it, right? And I'm still living with the other young lady, and I'm not practicing these principles in all my affairs, right? And one day, the lady I was living with, she got hip to it and went through the call log online or whatever and found out. And she was like, "You got to leave. You know what I'm saying? You got to leave." And I moved in with this young lady, and we locked in, right? I was working two jobs at the time, but Monday was my goal sobriety. The day I went to all my meetings, I would do, you know, work on my program on Mondays. Well, we ended up both, me and the young lady, ended up having Mondays off, and I got disconnected from the program again, right? I just stopped going, right? And this time, right, I decided, it got popped in my head. See, my disease comes through me a million different ways, right? It can come to me through women. It can come through other substances. But I know now anything that separates me from my program, it's going to take me on a loop that I don't want to be in. So I'm dating a young lady. She has a problem with substances. So I'm still trying. I'm sober and I'm clean at the time, but I'm trying to save her, right? I'm trying to get her in some programs and show her how to do this thing, right? And just got disconnected from the program, right? And if I'm totally honest, right, alcohol is not my favorite thing to do, right? I have some other things that are my favorite thing to do, other substances that are my favorite, but alcohol truly takes me to my bottom. Once I touch that, it's over with. It all costs out the wind, right? So I'm doing other substances, and this lasts for a minute. We living together, me and a young lady, but we're breaking up, getting back together, breaking up, getting back together. And at this time, we just taking each other through a roller coaster, right? So I get the grand idea. We get back together, and I get the grand idea. She says she wants to be a wife. So I said, well, she might as well marry. You know, maybe that'll change our relationship. I'm drinking, I'm using other substances, and we go down and we get married. Come to find out later on, this young lady suffers from paranoid schizophrenia. She has a lot going on in her mental health. I didn't know this at the time. You know, I just know this pretty young lady adores me, I feel like, you know what I'm saying, wants to be with me and wants to be my wife, right? After about 30 days of being married, she went to my phone, and I had been faithful. After 30 days, I hadn't been faithful, and it sits on the episode, right? And so we're going back and forth, arguing, fussing, fighting. She's there, she's not. And finally, she calls me up one day, says she has another, she's finna commit suicide. She tells me that she's finna OD, make herself OD. And I go and I take what she has, and I'm coming down the expressway. And I get the grand idea, you know, it's a substance I had never tried before. I said, hey, listen, might as well, you know, that's how my disease tricks me. And I took it in an IOD on 285 doing 60 in my truck. And I woke up, my truck looking like a tuna can, and they're trying to revive me, right? And I don't know why they gave me Narcan, and they keep rubbing their hands in my chest to keep me awake. And so my wife, you know, comes to the hospital, and they want me to stay in the hospital, but I tell her, go get me some alcohol, and we leave, right? And we leave. I no longer have a truck. We're sharing a car, and she has an episode. She takes off. She's gone. And I'm there alone, right? And I'm still working, catching the bus, but depression had kicked back in again. I had failed another marriage. I'm just laying there, and life is, for me, is unbearable. I feel like I'm drinking every day. I have this great job, but I don't even want to go to work. I remember at the end, right, I'm laying in my bed. I'm drinking a handle of vodka a day, doing any other substance I can get my hand on. I have this amazing garden tub. I never forget, and I'm looking at this garden tub in this amazing apartment. I won't even get in it. You know, I won't even bathe. I won't even change clothes. And my parents came, and they say, you know what you got to do, right? And I say, yeah. And I fight it for weeks and weeks. And then my higher power comes to me and say, man, enough's enough. You need to get back down to St. Jude. That was my birthday, 3/17/24. My mother and father went and got me some alcohol, and they said, in the morning, we're going to come get you, and you're going back to St. Jude's. And that was the day of my last drink. I went to St. Jude's. I was wounded. I remember that being in the detox thing and not even being able to sign my papers right. My mother had to get a bag of my clothes for me together. I couldn't write. I couldn't barely think. I was so bad off that the lady rushed my paperwork so she can get me up there and get me some medication and lay me down. And I never want to forget that, right? It was, the depression was really, really bad. I went through the detox and I followed every direction. You know, I wasn't the perfect client, but everything them folks asked me to do in that detox this time, I did it. You know what I'm saying? If they wanted me to clean this, they wanted me to do that, I did it. And they made a suggestion, you going to the men's program. And I said, yes. And I made a vow to myself and my family. I said, I'm going to complete this program. I had never completed anything in my life. I got my GED in prison. But I had never completed anything in my life but a prison sentence. I said, I'm going to complete this program, and I'm going to do whatever these people say. I had been in the program. I had left detox, went up to the program, and I was sitting down. And we went to this outside meeting, and it was at the Beltline. And I was still in pain from going through missing this woman, right? She had been calling to the rear, coming up to see me. She was still in active addiction, right? So she's coming up there and trying to, you know, see what's going on, playing like she really, really cared. And maybe she did. But it was throwing my head off. My head was off. And I went to this meeting at the Beltline, and they had this speaker, and he told my story, man. He told exactly what I was going through. He said that he was in a program, and he was going through a divorce. But he was up there smiling, right? He was smiling. He was happy. And I wanted what he had, man. And he got done. I went up there. I said, sir, you just told my story. I said, man, if I'm being honest, I just want this pain to stop, man. And whatever I got to do that, could you please be my sponsor and just help me through this? He said, yeah, I'll be your sponsor. He said, call me every day. And I reached out to him every day. And man, this guy was amazing. This guy is amazing. He's still my sponsor to this day. But he came and seen me while I was still in the program. He took me to my first AA dance while I was still in the program. He would take me out to eat, man. We were all working the steps now, but he would take me out to eat, man. So when it came time to do this fourth and fifth step this time, right? For the first time in my life, right? We had some conversation. He had told me some things about his life that made me comfortable enough to give him everything that I had, right? I told him some of the things I had never told anybody on this earth, right? I told him because he had made me comfortable, man. And that's an amazing feeling, man. And I just kept working the program, and I left St. Jude's and I went to a sober living community, and I kept working the program, and I kept working with my sponsor, staying in contact with my sponsor, man. And the money was coming back. I was working some good jobs. I'm doing service work. And one day I get a call, right? It's my wife's mother, right? My ex-wife now. But it's my wife's mother, right? She said, man, Holly's in rehab in Dubai, right? She's in there. She's diagnosed paranoid schizophrenia. She's dual diagnosis. She's working on herself. And they said, Vance, would you do me the favor? We went and paid for this divorce. Would you do me the favor, right, and go down there and sign this paperwork so that Holly has the chance to have a better life, right? And I'm working the steps. I'm working the program. And at first I was like, is that what she wants, right? She never responded, right? So I'm going to work one day. I immediately called my sponsor. I say, man. I tell him what happened and tell him, I say, man, I don't know what. Now, everything my sponsor tells me to do, ask me to do, or suggest me to do, right, it's not a suggestion for me, right? Because the bottom had got so low, you feel me? He asked me to do something, and I do it because I never want to go back to feeling that pain again, right? He helped me to allow that pain to go away. He showed me what to do to make that pain go away. And for that, I'm grateful. So I called him. I say, man, what, you know, this, you know, her mother called me She wants me to go meet this lawyer, sign the divorce papers. And he said, Vance, he said, go sign the papers. He said, God is doing for you what you can't do for yourself. And I said, whoa, man. And I sat there and I let the little pain flush. He said, I know it's hard. He said, I know it's hard. He said, call me, man. We'll talk about it later. He said, man, but go down there and sign the papers and get that lady a chance to do what she got to do. It might not be the end of your story. It might be the end of y'all's story, but I did it, man. I went down there and I signed the papers and I gave the young lady a divorce. And I went on with my life, man. I ended up moving back home and working with my sponsor. I ended up going to St. Jude's and, you know, today, right, doing service work, you know, I go to a meeting at a jail, and it's a powerful thing to be able to go to this jail and go in there for an hour and turn myself in for an hour and get to walk out after that hour's over with, right? And we have an AA meeting in there, right? And I spend time at St. Jude's. I go to every graduation, and I spend time with the guys at St. Jude's because they're my people, man. I remember the way it felt when I first got there, right? And I let them know that this thing is going to be all right, man. And they're my brothers, right? I was just there today, and I was talking to some guys, and they made me sit in the class, right? And I was talking to some guys, and it's just an amazing feeling, man. You know, I raised my hand. I haven't had the opportunity to sponsor anybody, but when the opportunity comes, I'll be available, right? I try to be of service. Today, I am there for my parents, man. When I got home, I looked, right, and realized how much my parents had aged and not me even noticing, you know, being drinking and being, I hadn't even noticed how old that my parents in their 80s. I hadn't even noticed it. You know, my mother can't even lift. I hadn't noticed that. So today I'm there for them, right? I go see them, and life is amazing, man. I went to a meeting one day, right, and I'm sitting in the meeting, and they asked me to do some service work, and I see this young lady. We start talking, and she has over a decade of sobriety. We click, and she's my baby, man, and I love her to death, and I deserve love today. And she say, I treat her amazingly, right? But I only treat her amazingly because of what this program has done for me, is what this program has taught me. And everything is not perfect. We always don't see eye to eye, right? But through this program, I know what to do when those things come up, when my character defects act out. I catch a meme every day, right? I met this man one time, and he had 30 plus, and he catches a meme every day. And I said, man, you gotta, you know, you really have to catch a meme. And he's like, yeah, man, because one of my other friends said it the same way. My friend Stokes, she said, you know, after 30 years of sobriety, I'm never too sober not to get drunk. And it sticks with me. So every morning, I'm up at my 7:30. Before I go to work, I catch my quarantine sober meeting. When I do that, I'm a better employee at work. I can keep my character defects at bay. Where I used to when I first got sober, tell you how I felt. I pause, pray, and proceed. I'm very grateful for this opportunity. And like my friend Grady used to say, man, God bless the dead. He said, I love you guys, and ain't nothing you can do about it. Thanks for letting me share.
I didn't make it to graduation, but thank God for the seeds St. Jude's planted. Thank you for your story. And we have asked Pete to do the chip.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Pete, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, we're at the Blue Chip Speakers meeting. Just as other groups around the world, we have a chip system to know our time is sobriety. We start out with a white chip. A white chip is simply a desire to stop drinking. We pick up this chip, and we want to put down the drink and try this way of life one day at a time. Do you have anybody interested in picking up a white chip this evening? Come on. After 30 days continuous sobriety, we offer a silver chip. After 2 months, we offer a goldy bronze chip. After 3 months, we offer a red chip. 6 months, we offer a yellow chip. After 9 months, we offer the green chip. And as our late friend Grady used to say, it's called the green chip because it's green. After 1 year, multiples thereof, we offer a blue chip. We celebrate our AA birthday or AA anniversary. Any surprise birthdays or anniversaries. We always come back to the white chip. As a late friend from quarantine and sober Gary Ward used to say, forget the pride to take the ride. If you're sitting on the fence, come on over to our side. Any second on a white chip. Now let's be grateful for the chips we have.
Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
First I slip, and then I quit. To a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, wake in there I see. Look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Take me where the promise is. All in. Sometimes quickly. Sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, God walks by. We walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Beware the promises. Oh.